Welcome to the Australia Sews podcast. This podcast celebrates the Australian home sewing community and shares stories from everyday sewers transforming their lives and their wardrobes. My name is Louise Sherry. Today on the podcast, we have not one, but two special guests, Lauren and Erin Ritchie, better known as Two Sewing Sisters. These Melbourne sisters love sewing. They also really love sewing together. Yes, that's right. They're sewing buddies. They live together, sew each other's clothes, and bounce off each other for creative ideas on what to sew next. It usually comes as a vision, sometimes quite an ambitious one, but the end result is just breathtaking. After listening to Lauren and Erin, I think you'll be inspired to want to give a special occasion dress a crack. But for now, here's the lovely and down-to-earth Two Sewing Sisters. So today on the podcast, we have Lauren and Erin, also known as Two Sewing Sisters. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having us.
So before we get into all things sewing, can you both tell our listeners what you are wearing today? Who wants to start?
I can jump
This
in.
Is going to be our challenge, isn't it?
Yeah. Does one of you jump in before the other normally?
We're usually pretty in sync and like read each other's mind. I think it's telepathic sort of stuff, but I'm happy to kick off. I'm wearing a dress that is made out of a pattern that the V&A Museum released when they did the Mary Quant exhibition a few years ago. So it was a free pattern that they released. And then the fabric I bought just before my birthday last year from Wangaratta, where we grew up, and managed to put it together, and that's what I'm wearing.
Nice. It's like a plaid.
Yeah.
With like a tie at the neck.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, the pattern has lots of different options. You can kind of mix and match different sleeve cuffs, different sort of neckties, things like that. So lots of different options.
It's lovely.
And so I'm Lauren, and today I'm wearing a Vogue number. It's a new release, or relatively new. It's got a stand collar and some amazing big sleeves, which they're doing at the moment. And it's Vogue 1633. And it's in a crinkly crepe fabric that we got from Minerva in the UK. It's got a light lime green background with a brown and black kind of florally, I guess, a leaf pattern on it.
It's lovely. As I mentioned, you are the duo behind Two Sewing Sisters, which you launched in 2017. You've got a blog, you've got some YouTube videos, a Pinterest page, and an Instagram page. You also have a logo, which you both stitch into your handmade clothes as labels. How cute!
We do.
What made you decide to start Two Sewing Sisters?
Well, we've been sewing for what it feels like forever. Our nan was an amazing seamstress. She sewed for all of our family, our mum and her sisters, including their wedding dresses, deb dresses. So she was a very accomplished seamstress. She never had formal training, which I think was an impact to her ability to feel like she really formally did it, but she was so skilled. We used to, growing up, spend a day with Nan a week and a day with our grandma. And when we were with Nan, we would spend our days in her sewing room. So we would help quote marks cut out patterns and be playing on the sewing machine.
I loved reading about how much of an influence your Nan was from when you were little kids all the way to before she passed. So it's just incredible the influence she's had. And even your granddad. So apparently your nan roped him into doing a lot of sewing things, like marking hems and going to the shop for some buttons.
Always matching thread. His job was always to take the piece of fabric into the local sewing store and try and match the thread when Nan ran out or something like that. So he was always there. I think he had a very big influence on the decisions and the fabrics and the patterns that were made. So, yeah, equally as big influences on us.
And did he enjoy it, or was he kind of roped into it and just did it?
No, I think he loved it. He taught us how to knit, actually. It wasn't like, so we knit not as much as we sew, but we do know how. And it was actually Granddad that taught us how to do that, not Nan. Nan was too busy doing all her own products, and he sat down on the couch with us and taught us how to do it. So he was very much capable and very passionate about it as well.
Wow. Because she sewed, I think I read, for 55 years, and she loved sewing for special events like you do, which I think that's where the kind of influence for those special occasion dresses might come from.
Absolutely.
So she
Oh, no. I was going to say, she had this concept around a new dress. That was a new thing. So when you had a special occasion, whether it was a birthday, a graduation, a deb ball, a wedding, whatever it was, you got a new dress to celebrate. And that was kind of the way that you commemorate things. So when we talk back on family events, we actually talk about the dresses that we wore and that each dress actually has a story about how it was made and what the decisions we got to do to actually create it. So anything we wore as kids for a special occasion, we'd go into the store with Nan and we'd select the patterns, select the fabric. So it had a lot of meaning to us in that way. And then also held memories of the event that we went through. So when we talk about sort of a dress, we're kind of actually talking about a family memory more than anything else and how that picture all comes together. And it just happened for our family that it happens through sewing and it happens through different garments that she's made.
And I believe you even shopped her stash and wear some of her clothes that she used to wear for herself.
We still do. She had such a large stash and her pattern collection. Like when you sew for 50 or odd years, the collection you have of different vintage patterns, and different garments and projects you can tell. She always bought matching sets. Like you didn't just buy one fabric. You had to buy, you know, the blouse fabric to match the skirt or whatever it was. So we have got like sets of fabric and patterns and a whole treasure trove of things. We're very lucky to have all those physical resources as well as kind of the passion part as well.
And she sewed a lot for our mum worked in a corporate settings and she made mum's suits for a long time. So we've got not just formal wear, but day wear and work wear as well. So it's fun to bring some of those out. So both Nan's garments, mum's garments and the patterns and fabric are very exciting.
Wow. So you both now live in Melbourne, but you grew up in Wangaratta. It's a city in Victoria, but it has a very historical country town vibe to it. So what was it like growing up in country?
Well, I guess for context, Wangaratta, it's the home of Bruck Textiles, which is quite a large manufacturer of textiles. And at the moment, they do a lot of work for the army uniforms and fabric for that. And for us growing up there, we went to a public primary school and then we went to high school there as well. And I guess when we talk about high school, we think of our, again, textiles teacher, Gail O'Keefe. She was also a key influence on both of us. We started textiles in year seven and then continued on, both of us, all the way through to VCE. And textiles and home economics are quite a traditional group of subjects, but Gail had industry experience in the fashion industry, so she brought not just a traditional textiles teacher approach, but also something of industry knowledge, which was a great value to both of us.
Your mum and dad were very supportive of your creative pursuits, and at Wangaratta High School, you both studied, as you said, textiles. But then you both went to uni and took very different paths. So Lauren, you became a milliner, which is making hats. And Erin, you became a lawyer. So was that always the plan?
I guess if we think about mum and dad's support of our creative pursuits for Erin, I think you should speak to Little Black Dress and what you, Dad and Gail, did with that, because I think that's a great example of that all coming together.
Yeah, so I think we could have probably studied anything at university and mum and dad would have been our biggest supporters. Like if Lauren wanted to be a lawyer and I wanted to do design, they would have gone, all right, let's do it. That sounds great. They would have supported us either way. But what Lauren was talking about is in year 10, we did for textiles, our project was a little black dress and that was the theme. So Coco Chanel, and we did a portfolio and everyone in the class created a dress. And Dad got there at the end of the semester and said, well, this is silly that it's just being displayed like in our textiles room. Like, why isn't the local community getting to see this? Particularly when, like Lauren said, it's not just interest in the community, but there's a real passion. There's lots of knitting groups and sewing groups, and we were the home of the Stitched Up Textiles Festival for many, many years. So Wangaratta has a real passion for creativity. So between Dad, myself and our class at school, we created the Little Black Dress exhibition that was held at the Wangaratta Tourist Information Centre. And we had all the students display their garments there and had an inspiration, you know, how they came about their take on a little black dress. So not only local members of the community could go down and see it, but also people who were visiting came through and got to see a bit of Wangaratta. And that was a collaboration that the local city council helped with through giving the space for free and then also support of, you know, different industries. We had a launch night where people got to model their dresses. And that's just one key thing of where, you know, mum and dad were saying, well, let's do something extra and not only support like Lauren and my passion for sewing, but actually celebrating the craft that's in our family and promoting it in the community. So I think, I mean, I'm now a lawyer, so my day job is very, very word-based. And when I get home at night, I do really love sewing, creative outlet. Yeah. I really enjoy it. And I love wearing things to work and starting a conversation with my colleagues that aren't always like, is not creative, but, you know, physically creative and tactile in the way that they show that creativity. So it's very different for me, but Lauren, your path is much more towards the creative side of things.
So when I was looking to my university studies, I explored a lot of fashion courses. So I looked at the time, RMIT, Kangen, White House, Swinburne, and I ended up selecting and was able to get into the RMIT Bachelor of Fashion Design. So I spent 3 years studying fashion design at RMIT at the Brunswick campus, it was then. And then in the evenings, I enrolled in the millinery course at Kangen Batman Institute. And that was a bit of sheer luck that aligned. Again, thanks to mum and dad's support. When I was in year 12, dad worked at the Wangaratta TAFE and he found this one weekend course about making millinery, making hats and headpieces. He's like, girls, you'd really love this. Do you want to go along and do this? So Erin and I both went along to Aubrey TAFE and met a milliner called Elizabeth Hemsley, who taught at the TAFE, and we did a weekend course. So when I was exploring university courses, I was aware that that was an option, that there might be some extra study out there. So I did my bachelor during the day, and one evening a week I went over to Richmond campus and did my millinery course in the evening. In the first year, you had to do it was 5 days at that time, work experience. And being new to Melbourne, I moved straight down after high school. I knew I enjoyed creating and I was passionate about handicrafts and quality workmanship. So when we had to do work experience, I wasn't connected well with the industry at that stage. So I asked my teacher at the time, I was like, I don't know who to contact. Who should I reach out to? And he's like, I think you and Louise McDonald will get along very well. And I'm like, oh, okay, I'll contact her. And I went along for work experience and then I never left. Well, 7 years later, I was still working with Louise. She invited me to continue on working in her business. And we worked on custom-made pieces and couture millinery for mostly racewear and special occasion.
Your hats are amazing. You can see them throughout your Instagram feed because you often match them with the garments that you're making, which is a really nice touch because you don't see that very often.
Race days are so much fun for us. We love creating something that's head to toe. So it usually starts with the dress. We'll find our fabric and decide, or it tells us.
It
does tell us, and sometimes we do have a conversation with them, because the way that we source or find fabric is that we'll see a fabric and we'll be drawn to it for maybe its color or its pattern, or it's in the case that I'm wearing today, the texture, and we'll be like, no, you're going to be in our life in some way. And we might not necessarily have a plan when we've purchased it, or it might be coming to us, but we know that that fabric's going to be something for us. So take it home, and the other day it was standing in the street and Erin's like, look at this fabric we didn't have a plan for, and we're asking, what are you meant to be?
I think we often talk about a vision, don't we? It's like, if we're really undecided about what we're going to make, we know it's not right. And then when you get it, you're like, and we'll often be, actually it happens a lot when we're walking, so like if we're walking somewhere, I'm like, okay Lauren, I've just had a vision, and she goes, okay, here we go. And then this fabric from this, you know, we bought that there, that would be perfect with this, what about that hat? And then it only takes about a minute or two for the vision to come together, but we sort of have to have that. And it often, like Lauren says, actually starts with the fabric, not necessarily a pattern or an image we've seen. It actually starts with that.
Because your collaboration process intrigues me. I mean, do you often just sit down, like you said, or go for a walk and then come up with what it's going to look like after you've selected the fabric?
And we don't often sketch. I know that there's many soloists who love to sketch, and Lauren and I much more do it through a verbal way. And I guess that's because we've lived together for so long, we communicate all the time. We're very in sync with sort of each other and their ideas. So it probably makes it very easy for us to collaborate in that way. But it is very like, sometimes I'll go to Lauren, oh, remember that blue fabric? And she'll be like, which blue fabric? Like, and then to describe where we bought it and what happened and like this and that, and kind of piece it together. And then you realize you're on the same page. So I think that does help, that we are very in sync in that manner. And able to kind of form different ideas. And then we challenge each other. And I go, are you sure that bodice is right? Aren't you sure you want a neckline a bit more like this? And we'll kind of push each other until we get what we think is a really good idea. And once we get that idea, it usually is what the finished garment you see. But it's a work of art, and that creative process is different for any sewist. You go through that different creative journey, just like any artist does, and that's just how it works for us.
And are you envisioning it on both of your bodies, or are you picking one more so than the other?
We definitely will, depends on the occasion. If a particular occasion, special occasion stuff, it is more so each other, like an individual piece. We will sew each other's garments as well. It's not that I only sew my work and Erin only sews her outfits. It's very much a who has the time or who has the, like, oh, I'm getting frustrated, this zipper's driving me up the wall, can you just put it in, or something like that. So it's not necessarily a set allocation of tasks or the same every time. It's quite fluid in that. For more day wear stuff, it depends on the fabric. There are some fabrics that scream, oh, that's definitely Erin's, or gosh, that's a Lauren classic or something like that. So but we do share, we're similar sizes and shapes, so we do swap garments a lot.
That is so unique.
We don't fight about each other's clothes and like, oh, Lauren, you stole my dress. Like, how dare you? I was going to wear that. Like, not ever a conversation that happens in our household. I'll often come home and find that Lauren's worn my dress for the day and it doesn't really matter. So I think there's also that fluidity of like, it really doesn't matter. It's a collaboration.
Wow. So you would literally raid each other's wardrobes and it doesn't
matter. Most days. Most days. We also live together, which very much supports and enables.
It does.
Some days we've not seen each other in the morning and come home at night. We're wearing very similar outfits. I think we had a black checked day the other day where we were both like, oh, glad we didn't end up at the same location at the end of the day besides home.
And as I look through your Instagram feed, you seem quite comfortable taking risks when it comes to sewing and designing. For example, you turned a kimono into an elegant dress and you put zippers outside of garments. Have you always been quite open with your concepts?
I think so. Yeah. No, you go. I'm interested.
I was going to say, I think we've got a bit more. I think we're getting a bit more daring as we go, but I think it's about pushing ourselves. We're not afraid to mix it up.
Yeah, you're hackers.
What I mean by that, we're hackers. So we're not afraid to put a different bodice with a different sleeve, with a different skirt, with that exposed zipper that it probably didn't have originally. But I think that's definitely something that takes time and practice. I think it's very difficult if you're thinking about if you're a beginner sewer, that's something that takes time to feel confident in, because you've got to be confident that the sleeve is going to fit. You've got to be confident that the bodice works for you. And it takes a bit of brain power to go, oh, is that all going to come? And sometimes we're just like, oh, we're just going to make the pattern. That's it. That's fantastic. We also then have favorites, like Erin's found a great A-line skirt. Our style shifted as everyone's does. And we collectively are loving an A-line skirt at the moment.
We actually saw a really big mix of big four and indie as well. So we do a lot of pattern testing for indie companies. But because of our nan's influence, she bought big four kind of patterns all the time. So we're quite comfortable. And we're also like we're quite a standard size, so that the big four patterns work for us quite well. We have friends who only sew indie patterns because they find that it fits their body shape a lot better. So we just do a big mixture. So that one is a Vogue pattern.
It's Vogue 1743.
Really big pockets, which I love, because I think particularly when I'm at work, I always feel like I'm carrying like three or four things but don't want a bag. So I love just putting things in my pocket.
Did you put zippers on those pockets?
Actually, speaking of, I made a pair of pants the other night, which I wore to work, and I realized I even made the pockets a bit bigger and I put zippers on them thinking, this is great, I'll fit everything in. And then I made the pockets so big, I weighed down the pants.
Oh, no.
Filled them up. So there is a risk of making the pockets too big, but that's just one of those things I'll change next time.
But I love your zipper hack.
Yeah, the zipper on the pockets is something we started, actually did it in a formal dress first, because Erin was going out to a cocktail event. And the challenge of that is you have a bag, you want to talk to people, you might be holding a glass of bubbles. That's a lot to juggle. And so we're like, well, why don't we just put pockets? But I don't want stuff to fall out. And I was like, well, why don't we put a zipper in it? So this has become not on everything, but we do think it's also got to depend on the line of the skirt if there's space for that. But yeah, there's zippers on the pockets.
Does it work on all types of pockets?
We've been doing it mostly in seam pockets on the side, because we've been using a welt zipper, so a traditional dress zipper. We're not huge fans of invisible zips. We've had
I think we very... used to be. We just had a few incidents, didn't we, of zippers breaking. So now for like more everyday wear or heavy duty, like for heavier fabric, we less risky, isn't it, Lauren?
It was for the particular, I guess, scarring story for me is Erin's 21st birthday dress. It was this beautiful cobalt blue satin, and it was a halter neck with a fitted bodice and circle skirt that had a shaped hem. And it was an underarm zipper. And I remember we were doing the fitting, we were about to mark the hem. I did it up and it broke. I was like, ah, it's a bit annoying. It's all right. I've got a backup. So I put the second one in. Put the second one in, went to zip it up, and it bust again.
On the night of the event, it busted again. And then Lauren is stitching me in.
I just refused to risk it. And then also I was worried about how a welt zipper would sit under the arm, and worried about the teeth digging in and being annoying. So as a result, I just stitched her in and then unpicked her at the end of the night.
Wow. You could have just slept in it. Waited until the morning and...
I should have. Until this day, that dress still doesn't have a zipper in it. Oh, I think you're so scarred.
You were cursed that day.
Yeah. This was not, it was not a good day. And Erin's also famous for having a massive hem. She loves, particularly on formal dresses, a circle skirt. And if not one, but more than a full circle, she'll do like two circles so she can lift a circle more than over her head. We like to let their skirts drop and then mark the hem using an old traditional hemmer with pins. So she stands on a box and I say, turn a little bit, too much. Back she comes. And that's takes a little while.
It's very accurate.
That's a
feel a bit of perfectionism coming out. I need to talk to you about your dresses. But before I do... It's actually so interesting looking at your Instagram feed before COVID and after COVID. So before COVID, so many evening dresses, so many special occasion wear, stunning. And then during COVID, you turned to more everyday wear. Was it really disappointing to pivot away from doing all that beautiful evening wear for gala days and balls and races?
2019 was the year of events. We look back, I think we were sitting at home during 2020, during a lockdown in Melbourne, and thinking, how did we go to so many events and how did we so many formal events and then be so different? And then I think the big change, like you said, if we did a lot more data, where we actually did a lot more, even less than daylight casual wear. I sewed my first hoodie and trackies and knitwear and stuff that we didn't necessarily not, it wasn't that we didn't want to make it before COVID, but our priority of sewing was much more towards formal wear. So, yeah, during COVID, we definitely made, a lot more casual wear, a lot more trackies because we were working from home like everyone else. And I think as we're starting to come out of it, Lauren and I are both in different jobs from before we entered COVID. So we're making a lot more workwear at the moment. And then we still have got sort of a little bit more trackies in there and a little bit more formal wear coming up as the events start to pop up in the calendar. So
I
think we're very even at the moment, aren't we, Lauren, as to the types of sewing we're doing, which has definitely changed.
I think something we also shifted in our sewing was fixtures and fastenings. We started working and testing for a few different pattern companies, in particular Schultz Apparel. And her patterns, we found a really clever, still a really feminine line, which I think is part of our style. But after about the second or third one we did, we realized that some of her patterns, she's really clever in how she did the pattern drafting, the making and the construction techniques, because they didn't have zippers in them, which sitting at home, COVID, not being out and active as much as maybe we have been previously, that actually became something that we shifted to, where previously if you'd said to us, oh, you're not going to put a zipper in every dress you make, we've been like, no, stop it. No, what? No zippers. We're going to use, that's crazy talk. As we've come through, like Erin said, we're starting to have events. We just had my birthday was a big event for us. We made what were probably more formal dresses, which was exciting to be pulling that out of our toolkit again and making something.
So you both had an evening dress for the birthday.
It was an event. We had to have a new dress.
What did you make?
So it was my 30th birthday and I'd had this a few. So the way we gather some dress ideas besides the fabric itself is we have a Pinterest board just constantly running. It's called Serious Party Frocks is one. And the other one is Frock Inspiration, which is more general day wear stuff. And if we see something we like, an element or a design, we just pin it to save it away so that when we're talking about fabrics that we've got a reference image. If the hand gestures and the half sentences aren't working out, we can pull up an image reference for each other. And I'd pinned it had a off-the-shoulder shaped neckline, but instead of curving down, it curved up. And I also like the element of a square hem, but as part of a circle skirt. And we'd bought this beautiful checked fabric from Darn Cheap Fabrics when they had the store in Port Melbourne that's now moved up to Fitzroy. And it was one of those times where I looked at it and I didn't get it at the time. And then we went back and I was still kind of like, oh, I like that. Back a third time and Aaron's like, can you please just buy this fabric? It is completely you. Shades of purple and pale pink in checks. Just get 4 meters of it. I don't know what you're making, but you're going to make something wonderful from it one day. So we bought it and it sat in the stash and we were doing a hunt through the fabric boxes trying to figure out what I was going to make. And Aaron's like, well, this is its time. So we pulled it out and I did a bit of pattern adjustments of an existing pattern. And yeah, it was very exciting to see it come together.
Happy with how it turned out?
Very, very. There were some elements like I cut the, it's got a check in it. So pattern matching was quite important. Mm. And when we talk about perfection, whether we're perfectionists or not, something that we are not really willing to give on is our pattern matching because we think it's the difference between what draws your eye and you go, oh, that's a really great line or a great pattern. So we're very specific about our pattern matching. And this was one of those times where it had to be really on point or else it was going to be confusing to look at.
I think the other thing is like this pattern matching, which is really important in some ways. And there's also playing with pattern. So in the side of Lauren's dress, it was pattern matched all over in all the seams that lined up with the check. But in the side panel, she actually put the fabric on a 45 degree angle on the bias. There's probably some sewers out there thinking, what do you mean you cut something on the bias that wasn't meant to be? But in limited circumstances, it's very helpful. And it was interfacing to keep it straight. But that aside, it actually was cut on the bias so that when she lifted her arm, the checks made diamonds. So it was a sort of combination of pattern matching in some areas, but then also playing with pattern and that making that really clear. So we got rid of the side seam. So the two, there was sort of a side front and a side back. So the side panel was in one piece and on with the diagonal check rather than the sort of straight line check that was on the front and the back. So it's kind of that combination that we play with. And anything with stripes, we do that a lot, Lauren. You know, we kind of think, oh, we'll do some bodice pieces this way and maybe the sleeve piece, you know, with the stripes running the other way. And that's sort of a complementary thing to pattern matching because you don't get the same effect of doing something like that if you don't have the pattern matching as well. So it depends on the pattern, but it's really, yeah.
This is where two heads are better than one because you're playing off each other with ideas.
And that's definitely how it evolves is, you know, I pulled out these checks and then we kind of found the pattern and then Aaron's like, well, why don't you have a go at what happens if we put on that cross? And I was like, cross? Oh, that'll be good because then I don't have to worry. Well, not worry, but it changed how I was going to approach it and the pattern matching around suddenly became less of a priority and the play on the bias came into it way more. And I'm so pleased that we did that because it would have been a lovely dress, but they just took it to the next level. And that's something that I think you get when you make your own garment is that you walk into the store and it's set for you where this is where you get to have some fun and you get to make it your own and no one else will have one like that.
Did you want to talk about what you made, Erin?
Mine was a classic hacking together that Two Song Sisters is well known for. So Lauren had to decide on her dress first, of course, because it was her birthday. And then we had to make the family not matching, which our family's known to do on many occasions, but coordinate. So I ended up wearing a fabric also from Darn Cheap Fabrics that was an organza with a sort of black background, which is quite unusual for us, but it had a bright hot pink and a gold splash through it. And I was fabric shopping with my boyfriend at the time. And he said to me, I said, oh, we're going to go get some black lining to put under it. And he's like, black? Couldn't you put hot pink under that? And it was actually the thing that made the dress very cool, because instead of making quite a solid black sort of sheen through the organza, it actually gave a nice sort of pink and brighter look to it. And it was a hack together of a Schultz Apparel bodice and sleeve, and then the Vogue skirt that we talked about before with A-line. And then we put an exposed zipper in there that wasn't in the pattern, so it was a bit of a hack. But, yeah, it looks really cool, and I'm really happy with it.
Nice. I can't wait to see the photos.
We'll be sure.
We should mention the photos, because James, Aaron's partner, takes our photos for us. So he not only his hemming skills are coming along. I'm sure he won't mind me saying, but he's also our excellent proctographer, we call him.
I was going to ask you who took your photos, because, yeah, they're beautiful. I thought you might have taken each other's photos, actually.
Sometimes during COVID we're in lockdowns, we've taken each other, but we're much better at, like, letting James hold the camera and me direct Lauren or me and things like that.
Can I mention some of the outfits that you made before COVID? So you're talking about all the special occasion. Honestly, there's so many, but I've just pulled out, I think, three or four of them. One is a pale blue silk dress with all those hand-stitched flowers and the vintage lace.
This has got a great story.
You say that about every dress.
Well, yeah. They do.
This dress is a dress that I made for one of the law balls. So when I was at law school, we'd do an annual sort of big black tie gala. And this year that we made that blue dress, I was actually president of the Law Society at my university. So I felt like it was the moment to really bring it. And this was the year that we did it. And the dress is inspired by a movie I used to watch with Nan, with Audrey Hepburn. And it has that straight dress underneath with the strapless and then the big overskirt. And I think one of the big four patterns has actually made a rendition of this dress since. And that was the vision that I really wanted to recreate, was that overskirt. So at events since, I've worn just the straight dress that's underneath, and then this dress goes over. Lauren, do you want to explain a little bit about the pattern? Because you actually drafted the pattern.
So this came from, Erin came with this Audrey Hepburn vision, but we also wanted to add a modern twist to it. So while it had the vintage inspiration, we wanted it to still be edgy and current as well. And we were going through our famous Pinterest board, and we found this bodice, but it was a strapless bodice with kind of really strong geometric lines and top stitched panels or bias on it. So we printed out the photo and I drafted it. So I replicated it. We made a few small adjustments to get the line what would be great for Erin's proportion, but I replicated most of those design lines. We did a toile. And then that's the bodice that's ended up on that dress.
The overskirt is a whole nother story where, well, the belt on the outside of the skirt is from Button Mania. They're excellent at making belts.
Amazing.
In Melbourne. And anytime we want self-covered buttons or belts, they're our go-to. They're amazing. So that's hiding underneath, but the overskirt is actually just on a very thin, I wouldn't even call it a waistband, Lauren. It's almost like a tie around my waist with a belt over the top. And I had that said to Lauren, the fabric's a bit plain. We need to spice it up a bit. What are we going to do? Could we add flowers to it? And this turned into this very large project of hand stitching all of those flowers on. And of course, we did it a bit late in the game, and I was stitching.
Always.
But I had to sew all of these onto the fabric, and because it's gathered, like, the piece of fabric would be a couple of meters long. So at the time, Lauren was actually dressing for a show. Lauren, maybe you tell this part of the story. You're probably better at it.
I was costume managing for an opera company, and that show was in the Regent Theatre in Melbourne, and Erin would sometimes also come help out as part of the dressing team. And between changes, we put this length of fabric on the table, and our dressing, like our team we were working with, we all sat around and everyone was sewing on flowers. So it wasn't that was a huge team effort to get all those on.
Six of us, I think, and the wonderfully helpful girls. And I think when you get sewists around the project and you kind of go in there, and I was a bit stressed, and I was like, do you think you could help me in between breaks? And they were all like, absolutely. And it's a bit of that sewing community being like, we've got to get this project done. All sitting down in between breaks of the opera, just stitching all these flowers. And it took a couple of nights. But the dress is absolutely as much their responsibility and efforts as much as it is ours. So
wow.
A very long story, but that's that one, a big project. One we're very proud of still today. I think it's one of the best ones we've made, the favourite.
One of my other favourites, and there's a lot, it's the red tulle dress and matching hat that Erin Water Oaks Day at Flemington Racecourse. Where did that lady in red vision come from for that one?
This one's become a bit iconic, I think, if we're allowed to declare that. This one was a similar story. So, Erin, where did we make this one for you, Lita?
Yeah, so I first started, this has been worn on two iconic occasions, I'll claim. Iconic's a big word, but anyway. The first one was when I was at law school, I was on the Australian Law Students Association and we held a big gala. It was our 40th anniversary and Lauren was made this dress for me. I didn't actually touch very much of it for this event. And then for Oaks Day, she made the hat to go with it because we had so much tulle.
The hat, amazing.
And wore it to Oaks Day. And that's the really iconic photo that you've probably seen. The reason we say it's iconic is it also was on the Maya Fashions on the Field promotions for the year after. And we also have it printed as a canvas in our dining room, which is why we really love. But the dress, it's another strapless dress, and it has sort of a scooped neckline with a tulle. I wouldn't call it a ruffle, but sort of a panel that comes up
between
it. Yeah, extension. And it's multiple layers of tulle. And Lauren did a massive effort. 5 layers of tulle with a lot of movement in it. And underneath that is a cotton drill, which is actually one of our more preferred fabrics to put underneath some of these more interesting fabrics. And even for formal wear, we do it. It has a lot of structure to it, which helps with the skirt. And there's also a very wide crinoline in the hem, which gives it that beautiful, that circle just really sits out really lovely, not just because of the tulle on top, but the crinoline that's in the hem.
So one of the main features of the skirt is, so it's a circle skirt and it's the hem's actually tiered. So the longest one is the bottom and then the 4 layers on top of that get shorter by, I can't remember how much, maybe about an inch each. So it creates a little gradient effect, and we'd seen this come through in the year before in the Fashions on the Field. There were some stunning tulle dresses. They were variegated in color, but we really liked the effect that the layered tulle, the different levels, made. So we took some of that inspiration there and then applied that in a block color, and then that's what's replicated in the hat. Through the edge of the hat is the softness gradient. Of the edge, the gradient.
Yes.
There. So, and I remember making the hat. So I made that for the, each year the VRC host a millinery war, which is sponsored by Maya, and it's invitational only. So, it's an honor to get to create a piece for this. And it's, I remember the second year, everyone was like, you've got to go big or go home. And I made it big, I made it bright. And Erin so generously models this for me each year. And I put it on her head and she was like, I know I said big and bright, but by golly, you really went for it this year. And it was probably along with the dress, one of those outfits where we really were confident in what we were creating and the look we wanted to make. And it didn't matter how the piece went in the competition because, I mean, you can tell we just love this outfit, the dress, the headpiece. And it's something that we, you know, still get to talk about today because we love it so much. And I remember being at the racetrack because you can't see her face when she's in it. She can talk to you and you can interact through the tulle, but from a distance, you can't tell who's underneath it. And we're talking to a millinery friend. She's like, oh, is Erin here with you? I haven't seen her yet. I was like, oh, no, she's wearing red. She's like, oh, she's the one in red?
She's the lady in red?
It's like an enigma. I look at photos and I don't even see it's me. Like, it's not like I see a photo of me. I just see Lauren's hat and it very much looks like, some of the photos are really artistic and look like works of art.
They're beautiful.
Yeah, sometimes I just don't see myself in it. But I think, Lauren, you've got a really good point there on the impact it made, because if anyone's ever been to the Spring Carnival Fashions on the Field, there's a lot of texture, there's a lot of bright colours. Even the stage at the background of the Maya Fashion on the Field tent is light pink but floral and patterned. And the way that the silhouette of not just the hat but the dress and the combination of the two sit together, it was just, it stood out, not because it was some sort of really elaborate kind of thing. It was quite a simple silhouette, one fabric, one colour.
You've made it look simple. Like you said, there's a lot of detail in the tulle and everything, but it looks simple, but simple is sometimes
better.
Better, yeah. So you both turned little scraps of fabric into hexagons and made a whole dress out of it. Now, that's really scrap busting to the next level. Did it really take you a whole year to complete that dress?
This is a marathon. So this is one of those times where we were walking along, probably around the tan in Melbourne, and Erin goes, I've had a vision. And I go,
oh, no.
I mean, I love them. Don't get me wrong. They turn out to be some of our most amazing projects. But when they're first getting pitched, love you, my darling sister, it's like, oh, we're doing what? And this was one of those. It was meant to be done for 2018.
Finished it by 19.
And to the point where we were reasonably confident we were going to get it done in 18. And then 2 days before, we were meant to go to Derby Day. So for those who might not be familiar with the race week, Derby Day is traditionally black and white, and everyone who goes to the race day wears black and white. Cup Day is really colourful and bright. Oaks Day is ladies' day, so it's usually floral, softer tones. And then Stakes Day is family day, so it's usually more fun, and that's when we've worn matching outfits with the family. One year we wore gingham. The year before, our parents were with us, and like Dad had a matching tie. We made Mum a matching headpiece. There was fabric, the same fabric in all of our outfits. And for Derby Day, Erin calls me 2 days before. She's like, I don't think we're going to make the hexagons in time. I was like, what are you talking about? We're going to be fine.
Because we're not quilters by any means, but the process we went through to create the dress is very similar. So we created each hexagon out of a scrap piece of fabric that was black and white, and then Biza fixed the back of them, stuck them onto the fabric, which was a cotton drill base again, one of our favourites, and then did the stitching lines. So it took quite a process, and I outsourced making hexagons to Mum. Sent her a little care package of hexagons to send back to me. One of the great things in the sewing community is we're environmentally conscious, I think, as a group, and scrap busting and some of the things people are doing with zero waste patterns. And now in Australia, we've got organized like businesses like Up Apparel who do textiles recycling, which is a very exciting concept. So I think that was one of the things where we wanted to kind of challenge that formal wear could be scrap busting as well. And you could also, I think, quilting is very easy to do scrap busting cotton-based fabrics, but actually using those principles to make a dress that's really wearable and also cuts through in sort of a more formal setting. So that was kind of what we wanted to do, challenge that. The silhouette of the dress is very simple, and we actually cut out the pattern pieces and then quilted it, so we didn't have waste around the different hexagons, and then stitched it all together, and then Lauren made the hat that coordinated with it. So yeah, another really good one. All those three dresses were all in 2019 as well. So
yes, it was a big year. And then suddenly those elegant dresses just stopped.
Yeah, they're all in the cupboard.
I have this vision of your closet being like the movie from 27 Dresses, like they're all bursting out as soon as you open up the door.
It does. And we've done a fundraiser for many years called Froctober, which for those who haven't heard of it before, it raises money for the Ovarian Cancer Research Foundation. And the concept behind it is you wear a different dress every day of the month in October. And we've done that for many, many years. And we were trying to not wear the same dress and double up and those sort of things. And it became a real challenge for us, and got to wear some of our formal dresses. There's a photo of Lauren and I that was published in the Herald Sun where we're in formal dresses, sequined, standing in the Coles, the local Coles, taking a photo. Lots of different really fun activities and events we got to be involved in. But that does remind us when you say 27 dresses, we're like, we'll probably like 31 dresses to get through October. But yeah.
In 2019, your Froctober dress was extra special as it was made with a special Froctober print through Spoonflower. How did that come about?
At the time, I was actually working at the Ovarian Cancer Research Foundation. So I did a internship through my arts degree at the Ovarian Cancer Research Foundation. I got that connection because I was involved in Froctober. And at the time, Lauren and I were both participating in Froctober every year. And there's images, the branding of Froctober in 2019 was illustrations done by a Sydney-based illustrator, Alexander Nia. And part of Alexandra's work is beautiful fashion illustrations, and she does lots of different collaborations with businesses. And Lauren had this idea, thinking, why don't we ask permission from Alexandra to make a fabric from her illustrations and the branding of Froctober and wear it to the fundraising event that happened. Lauren, do you want to talk a bit about you actually designed the fabric, the creative process to actually put that together?
So we were so fortunate that Alexandra is also an amazing dressmaker herself. And so when we pitched the idea, she's like, absolutely, but I have to have some of this fabric myself. We're like, of course, we'd be honored. So we're so lucky that we were able to get the digital assets for sketches and also the elements that were used in the marketing that year. So I took the elements that it was and created a pattern repeat with it. And we have done some printing with spoon flower before. So we knew that we loved, it's a light cotton sateen, and that's perfect for the style of dresses we like to make. So we created the pattern repeat and sent it off to Spoonflower, and it came. And then we made two quite, I guess, traditional frocks in that one is one of, or both of them are actually Nan's patterns, vintage ones. And then we wore it to the event that was held at Como House with Smooth FM for the OCRF that year to celebrate for October.
So that photo you've probably seen on Instagram is with Alexandra and Nia, and I think that's one of the great things about collaboration is, you know, she's excited to see you, and we're excited she, allowed us to collaborate with her and make it. So it was that's a really special event and a great collaboration. So it was great.
You're mentioning before the zero waste patterns, and there is this another dress that I loved that Lauren, you wore. It was the green floral dress. It was a zero waste pattern from Pattern Union called the Edith Smock. I'm not sure if you hacked it.
No, so we worked with Pattern Union to help support test a few of her patterns. She's an Australian pattern company, and we've done a few pattern tests, but we were so excited to work with a more local based business for that. And it was a really cool concept of you laid the pattern on top of the fabric, you didn't pre-cut the pattern, and then you'd cut both at the same time because there were no like armholes to get around and things like that. And it used every element, like the tab on the sleeve was a bit out of the, I think it was the counter to the top of the sleeve head and things like that. Like it was just so meticulous in ensuring that every piece of the fabric was used, which was so exciting to get to explore again. I remember doing zero waste, a few explorations in the pattern drafting class when I was at RMIT, and to come back to see how someone had applied that in a commercial pattern, as it might be, that was scalable for a range of sizes, was such a clever concept for Pattern Union to do.
And even just the choice of fabric that you use, I think everything just complemented that zero waste pattern really well.
Yeah, that was a fun pop of colour. That one was something we found at Spotlight. It was like linen feel fabric, and we thought it was had a bit of a folk whimsy feel about the smock pattern.
For those that haven't pattern tested before, can you explain what the experience is like?
When we first started pattern testing, we were thinking about what value we could bring to those companies because they're looking to put a product into the market, and we want it to be successful for them. So for us, we're quite experienced sewers in terms of the end, but also with my background in textiles and also being a trained teacher, thinking about where does this fall in terms of the level of sewing. Like when we sew a garment, we don't always look at all the look at the instructions. Am I allowed to say that?
I'll give it away so late in the podcast.
I know. That should have been teased early on. But we think about in terms of like, who's this pitched at? Is the instruction something that support the level? Is what's been asked of the pattern and the instructions, does that match up? So hopefully for the pattern companies we work with, we bring a bit of that perspective to it. Our experience has been fantastic to get to work with such a range of brands. It's come to us through different ways. We've responded to call outs on Instagram. We've had a few emails directly. We have reached out to a few brands as well. So it's a wide mix of things. And it's always exciting to see what's coming through in terms of the trends as well. It's also pushed us to make some different things. Like I'm not sure we necessarily would have made a zero waste smock pattern, but I'm so glad that we did because it was such a different experience for us as well.
And I think for people that are interested in pattern testing, there's such a broad spectrum of things that different sewers can bring. So whether, I mean, the the thing that's really important is they also want to test the fit. So a wide range of sizes is often what you see in some call outs. They'll want certain size ranges and things like that, that they aren't covered in their current pool of testers. But like Lauren was saying, like, we'll often look at instructions, think about how we would make it if we didn't have those instructions in front of us, and then look at the pattern book and go, oh, how have they done it? Does that make sense? Would we as a solus usually do it that way? Is there anything we can add value in that way? And then other comments you sometimes make is simply proofreading the pattern. It might be checking the design pictures. So sometimes, I mean, I remember one pattern we did had a burrito technique on the back of the shirt. And then kind of I was looking at the instruction trying to think, does that actually make sense? If I was a new sewist, would I look at that and understand? Because while the technique is really useful and quite simple, but you've really got to conceptualize it. So there's even like having those people that are really valuable, really skilled at conceptualizing things, and visual people versus, you know, things. So I think if you're a sewist of different levels as well, you know, having just experienced professional sewers test patterns doesn't necessarily help, you know, people that are starting out or had a few years experience. So I think if you're interested in pattern testing, it's a great way of just developing skills, and everyone's got something different that they can contribute.
I've heard that meeting the deadline is probably one of the most challenging parts. Yeah. Is that right?
Yeah, it is. And they run, I mean, depends on the pattern company as to how long they want to give, but there's usually ask for photos as well. So there's feedback and then there's a photo element. So we'll often make the garment, submit the feedback and be like, oh no, we haven't done the photos. So then you kind of have to do the photos in time. So yeah, the deadlines is something, and you don't want to be the person that holds up a small business as well, even though you're, you know, oftentimes you're giving your time for free. So there is that balance. But we've found, you know, if we've ever had to be a day or two late, you know, there's always good communication and they're really appreciative that you're helping them in their small business. So
it's so interesting to see a few companies that we've worked with send a bit of a summary email afterwards about the changes that they made based on everyone's feedback. And that's also been really helpful for us, is that, we didn't quite catch that or we missed that. So it gives us a bit of information about what we can look for next time and what's important to them as a pattern company as well. So that's been really helpful from, I guess, back to us as testers, is finding out what they're looking for in the testing as well. Because it's kind of a bit of an open brief when you first volunteer there. It's a, here's my pattern, sew it, let me know how it goes kind of thing. But understanding what's important to the pattern tester, like they might be, the detail might really be in their trade drawings or in their construction techniques, and the wording maybe wasn't as important, and that's okay. It's up for their company to decide where they want to put their time and priorities. So yeah, that's been really cool to see what changes have been made as a result of the testing. We're very fortunate to have a lot of experience in garment construction, so I can understand why if you'll be learning to sew or you're looking to develop some skills, why you would preference some pattern companies over another, because there are some patterns that might look so, I don't want to say basic, but it might be like the Ashton top by Helen's Closet.
I was thinking of Helen's Closet.
Yeah.
Very detailed instructions.
Such detailed instructions. Videos.
Sew-alongs.
Yeah.
So that's for someone who's looking to learn a new skill. That might be something that's really valuable to you. And what is maybe a basic dark top with a sleeveless tank top, is there's so much still to learn in that. And if you're not sure, you do need someone to learn from. And if you don't have access to someone around the corner or a friend that you can call on, your instructions or the videos from the pattern company are your go-to.
In 2020, you both joined Maverna as Maverna makers. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Maverna.
Minerva. We were calling it the wrong thing for a while. We have to confess.
Minerva.
We're also very Australian, so we've never heard a British person say it as every day on their back.
It's spelt Minerva, and it might be our Australian accents, but we interpret that as Minerva.
But I think we might be a bit heavy on the middle vowel.
What is Minerva? Am I saying it right?
We looked this up because we heard about, it's a fabric supply company out of Britain, and they have an amazing collection of fabrics, notions, fastenings. They've introduced patterns and sewing packs as well. And we looked up Minerva, and it's actually the goddess of craft and sewing.
There you go. It's a family-run business too, I believe. It's not like a big spotlight chain.
Yeah, it's a smaller one, and they've got a huge online store. I'm not even sure if they have a physical store. We've never had the chance. We haven't had the chance to travel to even think about exploring that.
So is it similar to patent testing patterns? What do you do there?
Open, much more open in the brief. And they are, they do call outs to become a Minerva maker quite often on their channels. The premise is that they have different fabrics that might be dead stock. They could be new products. It could be stuff that's sometimes it's not moving. Like you seem to say, there's quite a lot of fabrics there. So it's, you know, there's no one that has posted any inspiration pictures. So it's a bit of a motivator to create something for that fabric. And they send out a list of fabric options for the month. And when we say options, we mean there's like hundreds of options. Mm. And they have what like ambassadors and makers all around the world that are part of the program. And you select the fabric and how much you'd like to make. And then it's pretty much an open brief of whatever you would like to make. So some people are sewing garments for themselves. Some people are posting photos of their husbands or their kids or a quilt or whatever it is. And it's just an opportunity to just, we use different fabrics. So the fabric that Lauren's wearing is the crinkle cut, a crinkle fabric that's a cotton blend. And I saw that online. And I thought, this is a wacky fabric and I like it. Let's order it. We don't know what it is. It's coming from the UK. And then you get the opportunity to make something really different. Another one that we've made is a rain jacket. Not something that I ever would have thought of making, but we saw the fabric and we thought, oh, this is interesting. Like not something we would usually think to make, and made a rain jacket. We've also made a very shiny puffer jacket. Similar kind of concept. We tend to pick fabrics that catch our eye that are a bit
I had a vision.
I'm gonna puffy make jacket. A shiny puffy jacket. And that's when Mom goes, okay, that sounds good, Erin.
So, with some Wellington boots.
Yeah.
Minerva have put a lot of work into their website and creating a community through that website. So part of what we do in return for the fabric is create a post and share our product on their website. And what's great is that you tag the fabric that you've created it in, and then there's a bit of a feed for each fabric so you can see what other people have made in it. And so, you know, as Minerva makers, part of our role is to kind of offer some inspiration, but we also get so inspired by everyone that's on there too, and connecting with different people. You can see, you know, we pick our fabric and there might be no posts, but you know, we need to share our work within 3 months. So by the time that's happened, other people have discovered it, and then you get to see and think, oh, I never would have thought to make a metallic puffer vest with that fabric. But, you know, someone else has taken in a completely different direction. And I think that's part of the joy in what we all do as sewists, is that, you know, you see something in a fabric and someone sees something completely different.
Yeah, definitely.
I think that's a great thing about the sewing community, though, is it's like scrolling through Instagram hashtags. You could be lost for hours. I've lost myself in the Zadie jumpsuit hashtag many a times. And it's just really a good opportunity to share your passion. I mean, I think you asked us earlier, like, why did we start Two Sewing Sisters? Well, Two Sewing Sisters is really just a platform to share our creations. And we did it because we were wearing things that we've made, and people used to ask us, like, I like your dress. And the best thing we like to say is, well, we made it. And I think that it's, and they're like, oh, well, where do I see what you've made? Like, how do I get to see and share? And that's why we basically created Two Sewing Sisters, was to share. And at the time, Lauren was living in London and I was living in Australia. So it was also a way of us connecting across continents. So I think that's the great thing when you look at Minerva, when you look at Instagram, it's just a great community to share and see the diversity of different thought and ideas and different patterns. So that's why we share what we love on Two Sewing Sisters, and we love seeing everyone else's creations as well.
So we're going to play a quick game to finish up. You have to try and answer in one sentence or one word, if you can. Are you ready?
Yes.
True or false, every Christmas, you both, your brother and your mum and dad, have a family tradition where you all wear matching handmade outfits.
So this is Erin's partner actually in that photo. And for his first Christmas with us, we were like, you have to have a shirt. And he's like, oh, okay, okay. It's like, oh, you're going to make it? Am I going to make my own shirt? We're like, well, do you want to? He's like, yeah. And so he did a fantastic job of making his own collared shirt.
Why do you prefer to cut fabric on the floor?
Because we always choose wide fabric and our table isn't big enough.
And we like circular skirts.
Like many sewists, you both love a fruit print, but do you also like animal prints?
Yes.
Lauren?
I was going to say not as much. I think we're maybe more floral and... But then I did come home... This is not a one-sentence answer. I did come home with a series of leopard print fabrics one year and Erin's like, what are you doing? what are you buying leopard print for? And I was like, what do you mean? It's fun. It's like pastel leopard. And she's like, mm-hmm.
I thought leopard print fell in my side of the Venn diagram style. And she threw me off by bringing home leopard print. So it very much put it in the middle of our style.
Interesting. You both once said that sewing time can be any time. That said, is it true that in 2018, while travelling in Austria, Erin sewed on a train?
Yes.
Dress wasn't finished.
It was actually a zipper, even worse than sewing anything on the train with hand stitching. It was a zipper.
Also, while in Austria, Lauren pretended she was Florine Maria from The Sound of Music and spun through the Austrian hills in a handmade polka dot dress. True or false?
True. There was singing involved. Not very good singing.
The hills are alive.
Yes, we went on the tour and naturally had to wear frocks. We do have dresses made out of curtains, but unfortunately we didn't pack it that trip.
A question you get asked a lot is, do you ever fight? So I'm going to ask it too. Do you ever fight?
No.
No.
Never.
Unbelievable.
Have.
Not even over a dress.
The Zadie jumpsuit by Paper Theory is a very popular pattern in the sewing community. You've now made 4 Zadies. Are there plans for one more or 2?
Lauren said the words to me last night as I looked at a piece of fabric, why don't you make a Zadie? We were late adopters to the Zadie. I have to say, people caught on to this pattern long time before we did, and we were silly not to do it earlier. If you haven't had a look at the pattern, it's a wonderful no fastenings thing, and
suits a lot of body shapes.
Oh, yeah. And so many different fabrics. I've seen sort of sequin ones, cotton ones. Yeah, a great pattern.
Last question. Your lovely Nan loved sewing clothes for special occasions. You both love making dresses for special occasions. With lockdowns hopefully behind us and events back on the agenda, will you get back into making evening wear and special occasion dresses?
Yes. And 2 events on the horizon. Lauren has the Millinery Association of Australia has their Gala Design Award in Melbourne in a couple of weeks. So that's one that we'll definitely be sewing for. And the other one is the Melbourne Frocktails event in July. We've also got tickets to that. Very hard to get tickets to the
Frocktails. July this time, is it?
Yeah, very popular. So we managed to get tickets. We've missed out in the past. So we'll make a dress for that. So there are two more formal events coming up, and then Spring Carnival later in the year, we'll be back in full force. So
July is just around the corner. You better get cracking on that dress.
We're late sewists. That's probably...
don't tell them all the truth.
Well, that's it. Thank you so much, Lauren and Erin, for being such great guests on the podcast.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Australia Sews podcast. If you know someone from Australia who would be great to have on the show, email australiasewspodcast@gmail.com or send me a message on Instagram @australiasews_podcast. You are more than welcome to nominate yourself. You can also find me on Instagram @make_thrift_sew. Now, back to sewing.